if you've had fibromyalgia and your entire body has hurt for a long time, or rheumatoid arthritis, or you've got Hashimoto's and you're just tired all the time, part of your identity becomes your condition. I had somebody say this recently. I thought it was so true because this was true for me. He said, everybody's got 99 problems until you have a health problem, and then you have one problem.
I'd like to welcome our next guest, who is Dr. Josh Axe. He's a leadership expert, entrepreneur, and physician. He earned his doctorate of chiropractic from Palmer College and a master's of science in organizational leadership from Johns Hopkins University. Josh is also the co-founder and CVO of Ancient Nutrition and the founder of DrAxe.com. His company ranked on the Inc. 500 fastest growing companies 2 years in a row. He's a best-selling author of Eat Dirt, The Keto Diet, and Ancient Remedies. Josh is also the founder of Leaders.com, an online platform that provides the latest on breaking news, leadership, business, and wealth. He regularly teaches lectures and trains entrepreneurs on leadership, mindset, and self-development. He's married to his wife, Chelsea, and they have two daughters. They live between Nashville, Tennessee, and Dorado, PR. He enjoys cooking, staying active, swimming, cycling, and prioritizing time for his health and family and his faith. His latest book, Think This, Not That, will be available nationwide April 2nd, 2024. Before we get into this week's interview, just a quick reminder that we've created a special offer specifically for listeners of this show on your very first purchase of any of my products on amymyersmd.com. Simply enter promo code TAKEBACK15 at checkout and you'll receive a 15% discount on your first AMMD purchase. That's promo code TAKEBACK15 at amymyersmd.com. Hey, so welcome, Josh Axe. It's been like forever since we've chatted. I'm so excited to have you on Take Back Your Health with Dr. Amy Myers.
Amy, thanks so much for having me. It's so good to see you again and excited to catch up.
Absolutely. So we just caught up for a quick second, but you have been on an extensive journey that I'm excited to share with my listeners and really hear more extensively about as well.
Yeah, as I mentioned, it's been a crazy couple of years. I was in the best shape of my life, ended up going in for an actual natural procedure, medical procedure, and ended up getting an infection in my disc and my bone, and ended up meeting with a doctor, infectious disease specialist, who told me I might never walk again. And because of that, and I didn't walk for a year, an entire year. Wow. This time last year, I wasn't walking. But I'll say this, I am walking now. I have 90% of my health back. I still have a little bit, which I should be back 100% this year. But I learned a lot through the process. I learned a lot about cellular medicine, regenerative medicine. I learned more than anything about mindset and the power of how to awaken our healing mindset in order to heal a number of conditions. And so, yeah, excited to share more about all of the things that came about from that. And I'm a big believer, and I know you've experienced this as well, through you overcoming a condition yourself, autoimmunity to heal. But, you know, God can turn our pain into purpose, right? And being able to use that to help others. And so I'm excited to help other people break through their health struggles and other life struggles with some of the content.
Yeah. So I am so interested in exactly what happened and how you healed from that. Before we dive into that, you have a new book that's coming out that really, it sounds like, is based on your experience with this mindset. So you've shifted from this food is medicine and functional medicine, getting down to the root, into what I believe you're calling now mindset medicine. And your book is called Think This, Not That. So tell us, it sounds like this experience really began to lead to that, but tell us how you really got into this.
One of the things I realized when I was, so what happened was I went in for a natural procedure in a regenerative medicine clinic. I had a little bit of back pain. I got a natural injection of my own cells, but somehow during the injection process, bacteria, whether it got on the needle, something happened, and then my disc got infected and my bone got infected, something called osteomyelitis, you're familiar with. I got an abscess and very close to my spinal cord. And so this infection started spreading around my spinal cord. And so I went in and I decided I want to do everything I can to heal all naturally, but I did get on antibiotics for a month because... Now, most of the time, they put people on it for 3 months. That's how serious it is in an IV. I was able to decrease the time because I had read a study on hyperbaric chambers and how those can help you heal more quickly. So I got in a hyperbaric chamber, a hard chamber, for 2 hours a day. And then I did IVs of silver and methylene blue. Like I was, my pee was blue for a month. I mean, I started doing all kinds of things. Only ate meat and vegetables, pretty much. But I had this thing happen where really I kept getting worse at first for 3 months.
Wow.
Until finally one morning I woke up and I couldn't walk. And okay. You can imagine, because you've got kids, you've got family. And so we had to have an ambulance come pick me up. My daughter, I have a 3-year-old, and she's in tears and crying. And I'm brought there, got an MRI. They found the spinal infection. Well, I'm in Puerto Rico at the time. So I wanted to get treatment in the U.S. because we've got a great emergency care system. Got flown on a plane to Florida and met with this doc. And I'll say, and then by the way, I had tried everything up to that point that I knew. I didn't know it was an infection, but I was taking supplements. I had been getting some natural treatments. And then I started that treatment. It still didn't turn around right away.
So just to clarify, you were not on the antibiotics yet until you could not walk and got flown to the U.S.
Right. Because I did get an MRI a few weeks prior and it didn't show up. And so I still kept feeling worse. And I mean, for the first time ever, after I met with this doc and he told me, there's exactly what he told me. He said, here's your prognosis. Worst case scenario, you're permanently disabled. And he said, best case scenario, you're going to have pain the rest of your life. And anytime the weather comes through, you'll be the first to know it. Now, first off, I don't think he had the best bedside manner. Because
of course not.
It's just not. First, I've practiced a very different way with my patients because I understood neuroplasticity and the power of the mind and the placebo effect and nocebo effect for us healing. And so, but he was the exact opposite of the way that you and I probably practice in that.
At this point, you're probably still in the ER, right? Or maybe you've been admitted at this point. I mean, you're not weeks into your treatment, right? I mean, this is like within days that he's giving you this prognosis.
Exactly. Within days. And I'll say this too. After I got that, now listen, I know the truth. I know the amazing ability the body has to heal itself, but also I know how damaging infections can be in that area. And so I just got for 24 hours, there were emotions I'd never experienced.
I'm sure.
Felt despair, hopelessness. And I remember the next day thinking, you know what? This is not serving me. This is not the best way for me to move forward, is thinking about and meditating on the worst case scenario and how bad this could be for my future. I said, I need to focus on where I want to be and where I believe God can help me be through doing all the right things. And so I said, you know what? I'm believing that a year from now, I'm going to be throwing my daughter in the air in the pool again. I'm going to be, I was supposed to officiate my sister-in-law's wedding. I like all of these things. And so I said, I need to picture that, work backwards, and create a plan in order for that to become a reality. And that's exactly what I did. And so finally, after getting in the hyperbaric chamber with the antibiotics, with all of the holistic treatments, I started getting better. Like it was like 1% better a week, but kept getting better and better. Now, it was still 6 months before I could walk, which is crazy, but like the disc doesn't heal very fast because there's very little blood supply there.
So did your entire family return to Florida at this point? Were they here supporting you?
So we all went there and I got these regular treatments and finally started healing. But during the time, this is when I wrote this book. But what I realized during this time was food is medicine is powerful, but mindset medicine is probably even more important, because when I started looking into the literature on what it takes to heal, there have been people in a very similar situation that I was in that where they didn't end up walking again, and some that ended up getting back to 100%. And I started looking at what's the difference outside of course, you need to get these treatments, right? But what still would cause one or the other to happen? And mindset is such an important part of it, because when you have any sort of medical condition, whether it be autoimmune disease or cancer or hypothyroidism or a spinal infection, when you envision yourself healing in the future and you believe you will, your body actually starts sending chemical messengers and nerve signals and working via neuroplasticity and these neurological pathways in order to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody goes into their doctor and they're told, hey, you have to be on this pill the rest of your life, or you may never walk again, or you have to live with this condition forever, their body believes it, their neurology believes it. And oftentimes that's the thing that's blocking their healing, versus believing and knowing I can heal from this and really following that plan. That's tremendously important. I also learned in a study on the placebo effect that you can amplify the placebo effect. And you do that by, number one, believing that you can and being certain about it. The second step, though, and really visualizing that happening. So there's really the power of visualization with this. And Norman Doidrich covers this in his book about neuroplasticity in a really powerful way. But the second part is getting emotional about it in a positive way. So for instance, I would picture myself throwing my daughter in the air and having joy with that and saying, I can't wait for that to happen, experiencing that excitement while I was visualizing it. And then the third component is having that plan in place and following that as closely as possible. But I followed the plan. I was able to 6 months later officiate my sister-in-law's wedding. I'm able to back working out, lifting weights, doing these interviews, and I'm so grateful for it. And I don't have pain when the weather comes through. I'm in Puerto Rico. We had a big storm come through. No pain with that. So all that being said, I was able to, through, I think, the power of the mind, really heal and heal completely. And so in this book, I really get into limiting beliefs and how to break through those. I get into also even things like building your identity and purpose and experiencing a breakthrough in your life. And so that's why it's called Think This, Not That, is there are certain things we have to think in order to heal, in order to be our best.
Look, you're an accomplished gentleman. You went to medical school, chiropractic school. You've started your own business. You've, you know, created supplement lines, written multiple books. So there's a certain tenacity that you inherently have, I inherently have. For those people that don't have this type of tenacity and that maybe even come from the culture of my doctor said this, so that's what it is. How do you even begin to get somebody to shift that mindset, to question the doctor or their life circumstance?
I think in terms of, let's talk about motivation first, and then I'll talk about the doctor side of things. So there's two components here. I think one is pain and pleasure. So, and I've used this with my patients before. I think sometimes people don't realize that if they keep doing what they're doing, if they keep thinking what they're thinking and living like they're living, where that will lead. I don't think people actually have, and I think awareness is the best word I could use for that. When I look at people that are living the best lives possible, they're aware. They have a high level of awareness in their area. If I think about the spiritual world, the mystics, the pastors and rabbis and priests and people like that, there's this calm serenity about them. They're very spiritually aware. If I think about somebody financially, like a Warren Buffett, he's very financially aware. Like, he knows if people are going to be healthy, they need to be physically aware as much as possible. How am I reacting to this food that I'm eating right now? And so I think there's a level of awareness. And so all that being said, I don't think some people are aware with, let's use type 2 diabetes, for example. If I would sit down and work with a patient with type 2 diabetes, being able to share with them, listen, if we don't make some lifestyle changes, even if you're taking a medication like metformin or on insulin, here's the reality of what the side effects are. Here's the pain you're going to experience, such as nerve degeneration and losing maybe your foot. I mean, there's really serious things that can happen. Lethargy, low energy, weight, all these things can happen if you don't make changes. And so one, I think people should tap into pain and realize that if I don't make changes, that pain is going to be worse than the discomfort of changing my lifestyle. And then the other one is experiencing pleasure. Thinking about for myself, like, I want to be around for my daughter's wedding. Mm-hmm. I want to be like my mom when she had cancer. I asked her this question. I said, Mom, why do you want to be alive in the next 30, 40 years? She said, I want to bring my grandkids to Disney World. And my mom's in her 70s. In fact, I talked to her yesterday. She's actually at Disney World today with my niece and nephews. All three of them are at Disney World together. So all that being said, we need to tap into pain. We need to tap into pleasure and use that to motivate us by thinking about what's the worst case scenario if I keep following what I'm following versus what's the best case if I start making these changes in my life. And then I think a similar thing, awareness about the medical system. When you start to learn facts like, for example, the pharmaceutical system, how much money is in that industry, or that the United States and New Zealand are the only two countries that are allowed to market to pharmaceuticals to people, because think about the contraindications with that or the conflicts of interest. The fact that you have a doctor and the pharmaceutical companies that are going to make money by prescribing this versus what's actually best for the patient, to think about that when somebody's in medical school, they get zero nutrition classes. You only study disease, you never study health. So I think when people become more aware of, now, of course, people like yourself, now I had some hours in the schooling I went to of nutrition, but most of what we have learned, you and I, has been through pouring through thousands of hours of medical journals and reading books and writing books. And so learning that way, But I think when someone becomes more aware about the truth and reality about the medical system, about doctors, it really has to be through self-study if you're going to be an excellent physician. And then also sort of tapping into that pain and pleasure. I think those are important tools. And I'll say one other thing, and this is something I cover in my book, is I don't think people need to change everything at first, right? I mean, I'll tell you, I've had people experience breakthroughs by just changing breakfast. I mean, that's sometimes where I started with some patients. I said, listen, just change breakfast. That's one third of your diet. I mean, that's a really could be a tremendous change to start to help you experience a breakthrough. So I think those are some things that people might consider and some good places to start.
Excellent. And, you know, I think some people, I mean, you had the advantage or the ability to go get hyperbarics and go get these IVs, not only from a standpoint of being an educated doctor who knew about these, you had financial resources. And so I believe that you're probably starting from a place where when you're talking about pleasure and pain, where you didn't live in a life of pain. And so you're able to think about these pleasurable things. I mean, I'm just thinking about the people that maybe don't have these resources. And when someone's trying to coach them about diabetes and saying, here's the road that it's going to go, but it could look different. But maybe that person is someone who has suffered much of their life and they don't really know a different way. I mean, you kind of talk about this later in the book, which we can get into, sort of your story in life and your story in your family about the hero and the victim and the villain. And maybe some of these people are, their story is that they are always the victim, right? Maybe they've had health issues their whole life or abuse or something else that led them. And look, we know certainly with autoimmunity and many chronic diseases that trauma and things like that are part of that story for many people. I know I heard it with so many of my patients. I know likely you probably have too. So I guess I'm just saying somebody who doesn't already have this awareness, somebody that doesn't maybe even have these resources, how can you get someone to tap in that maybe has lived their life as a victim into life could be different?
Yeah, well, I think you and I definitely both experienced this. One of the things I realized with a lot of patients is maybe earlier in their life, they did feel okay. But some of them have felt so bad for 20 plus years that they literally have forgotten what it's like to feel good. So that is absolutely a reality and something I have great empathy and compassion for, because I know, because I had a mom like this growing up. My mom, after she went through chemotherapy especially, she had chronic fatigue syndrome. She had autoimmune disease. She was sick and tired all the time. I mean, she had severe chronic fatigue and just felt terrible for many years. So that went on for 11 years. And then she was diagnosed with cancer again. And that second time, we decided to take a natural treatment, start taking care of her. But one of the first things she told me was, this is 6 months after she finally was cancer-free and healthy again the second time and followed the natural treatment. She said, I didn't realize I had felt that bad for that long. And so that's an absolute reality that a lot of people have. And I think for a lot of people as well, that their condition becomes part of their identity, right? If you've had fibromyalgia and your entire body has hurt for a long time, or rheumatoid arthritis, or you've got Hashimoto's and you're just tired all the time, part of your identity becomes your condition. I had somebody say this recently. I thought it was so true because this was true for me. That he said, everybody's got 99 problems until you have a health problem, and then you have one problem. And so when you have a health problem, it can become all-consuming, almost the only thing you think about, because when you feel bad, it's so top of mind. I mean, you don't feel like going out. You don't feel like doing some of the things even that you're skilled or gifted at. So what I would say is that the first thing you have to do is take a leap of faith, and that's believing that there's more. Believing that you can heal, believing that there's more in life and that there's more out there for you. And I can tell you from having a mom who had all these diagnoses, who was so sick in her life, my entire childhood growing up, that she didn't believe at first. And then she decided to believe I can heal, that there's more for me. And my mom would tell you she feels better now in her 70s than she did in her 30s and 40s. And so I will say, and I know that's a hard thing maybe for some people, but to believe, like just, I would ask you to believe that you're called to do more with your life, that you've got gifts and skills that no one else in this entire world has. And you need to become aware of those. I think I talked earlier about this awareness about where am I at physically? Where could I be in the future? One, have faith that you can be a great place in your future and be aware of what your gifts and skills and strengths are now to know that you can add something to the world. I think that a lot of people don't believe or are also aware of how their actions don't only impact them, but all the people around you. And if you don't use your gifts and skills, it hurts everyone around you. The world loses something. And I think people maybe have a lack of self-worth and esteem and value about maybe what they can offer. But just to give you an example, like think about the world today if there weren't a Michelangelo the artist, right? Who used his gifts and talents to paint the Sistine Chapel and create the Pieta and all these things. I think about if I didn't have a mom, like if I didn't have my mom, how much less my life would be. Now, listen, my mom has never labeled a saint. She hasn't been in any magazine. She doesn't in any of that. But she was a great mom. And I think the fact that if some can just be a great parent, knowing the significance of that's important. I mean, I think that as I was writing this book, one of the other things I tapped into, Amy, which became so convicting for me and motivating, was all of us attach different levels of meaning to our identities. So I'll give you an example of this. If I think about myself as a dad, okay, the very lowest level of sort of meaning attached to that, or the level of significance, would be I impregnate a woman and I'm done. I can still biologically, somebody would consider me the father of that child. But if I believe I'm done and I have no, there's really no value I can add there, then that's a very low level of significance. I mean, really, it's sending the world backwards. I mean, the fatherlessness, and when you look at the statistics there for if a child doesn't have a father, what that means, or a parent, I mean, it's devastating to them. But all that being said, that's a very low level of meaning. Now, let's take a step up from that. And I believe as a father, my job is to show up and provide for my family. Well, that's a lot better. You have your dad around, he's showing up, providing for all of the family. That's a massive step up. But there's a step beyond that. And that's that I believe as a father, I'm a divine being. My kids are divine beings. They're called to live for eternity. And I want to help them. And I believe they're called to love people and make earth a heavenly place. And I'm called as a father to do two things: help them grow and excel in character. And I'm also called to find what are my kids' unique gifts and skills, and helping them take being an artist or an athlete or an entrepreneur, whatever that is, to the absolute moon. And I'm going to pour my heart and my soul into being the best dad ever and raising virtuous, incredible kids, right? So my point is, most people are living around level two, between level one and two, some people a little above level two. But if you can go to that level three of realizing that, you know what, even as there's this quote by Andy Stanley, and it's so powerful. He said, the most important thing you will do in your life is probably not something you do, but someone you raise. Just as parents. I mean, absolutely. So I say all that to say, I think the more that we can tap into what value can we add even to our families. I mean, Mother Teresa said, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. I mean, it really starts there. So all that being said, I think I was really convicted about changing the world doesn't mean that, like, for you and I, we're going to go and build, help save a million people's lives in health, or it doesn't have to be writing a New York Times bestselling book or whatever it is. It really is, if I just go home and just really love my family, wow, I mean, that's impactful. And I think that was a big part of my mom's motivation. She wanted to be a grandma. She wanted to go out and help and be the best grandma ever. And so I hope that answers some of your questions, but I think that can help you get, here's the thing. If you stay stuck in a victim mentality that, you know what, like when I got this spinal injection, which this was a mistake on their part, I believe.
Oh, I mean, how else do you get an infection? Absolutely.
Yeah. So I had feelings for a little bit of, this isn't fair. Like, I'm not able to play with my daughter right now. I might be permanently disabled. But then I thought to myself, this isn't serving me. Like, me living in a victim state, my mom, if she was living in a victim state, it doesn't help me. It doesn't help anyone around me. I need to be the hero, which is, I'm the person that climbs the mountain. I'm the person that beats the odds. I help other people do that. And so I would just encourage people to really embrace that heroic mindset of going from victim to saying, no, I'm going to go and become the hero. And then I'm going to help other people in their lives. Like what my mom did after she beat cancer, she started inviting other breast cancer survivors over and teaching them how to make green smoothies, you know, at home. So that's just, you know, would be an example.
So a little bit, you know, I think that this relates. You have a chapter in your book about finding your why. I mean, you've mentioned it before, you know, being there for your child and throwing her and being there for your sister-in-law. So let's talk about that. What is your why? Maybe not, you can certainly speak to your particular why, but for someone who doesn't know that concept, I know that concept, but what is a why? And how does somebody figure out what their why is if they don't already know.
Yeah. And this is so important for us living the best life possible, but also our health. There are studies that we'll all get into to just show this, but really your why is your purpose. Like if I asked you, why do you exist? Like, why did you get out of bed this morning? Right. I mean,
mine is to help people, to be an incredible mother and do exactly what you're saying, raise a really good human being that's going to give back to the world and to help people. I've known my purpose for a long time. But some people don't. I mean, some people don't. They go to jobs just because it's a job or it's a good job and it has insurance and it's able to pay and provide for their family, but they don't really have any connection to it. They don't have any purpose to it. It's literally a job. And there are many people, I mean, you know that we're in the minority.
For example, in the book, I quote this study. The main study on this discovered that 25% of people know their purpose. Mm-hmm. So 75% of people don't. And so it is definitely the majority of people that don't. And there was a study that shows that when somebody retires from work, their chance of more, if they don't find something to fill that gap, a purpose, their risk of dying early goes up astronomically. It takes years off their life. And this is known in Chinese medicine. When you start studying it, they actually would say that purpose is the main factor above nutrition, above exercise, the main thing that fuels your cellular energy and your body's ability to create ATP and live a long time is a purpose. They would call it qi. That's the word in Chinese medicine, but that's purpose fuels that. And so it's critical for your health. If you want to live a long, healthy life and heal, you've got to have purpose. I mean, it's really important. So purpose is really having a why. The way that I really tap into this is, one, I believe we all have a global purpose together. And in order to think about purpose, the idea there was started, it's in the Bible, but also Aristotle, that famous philosopher, talks about having an aim, or the word comes from telos, which means it's similar to a telescope. So, and you're looking at your life in the world with the end in mind. Okay, what is the ideal future? And so now some of this has to do with my faith beliefs and religious beliefs, but this would really tie into most religions, by the way. But the really goal of society is to love each other and make earth a heavenly place, to where you turn this Garden of Eden, this little area in Mesopotamia, and that becomes the entire planet. And we practice this somewhat through regenerative agriculture. You know, when you go and you take all these fields of soy and corn that are destroying the planet the way they do agriculture today. And if you plant a food forest, you can actually, and people have done this in certain areas, you can turn a desert into a rainforest if you practice the right type of agriculture. So you can absolutely transform and change a climate and an area. And so all that being said, imagine, I'm a big fan of The Lord of the Rings. And if you read those books by J.R.R. Tolkien, he describes these places of like, you live in the site of a mountain and you've got an ocean and a waterfall. Think about the most beautiful place you've ever been. I'm thinking about my wife and I when we did our honeymoon to St. Lucia, okay? So if the entire world and planet looked like that, in different eras that were unique, but the entire planet was a paradise. Well, that's one goal we have, is to turn planet into a paradise. Another one is to help love people. And that's putting people in a position where they're growing to their optimal and their character. And also they're growing in their area and their unique giftings. All right. And when those things happen, if we want to find out, hey, what is purpose? Well, it's loving God, loving people, turning earth into a heavenly place. And then what's our individual role in that? Making the world a better place. And that's really where it comes to, like I said, finding your unique giftings and skills. Like for you, Amy, you're an incredible doctor, an incredible educator, right? So, and then of course, you've got being a wife and a mom in those roles. So you have some of these different roles. And so you're going to be thinking about, okay, God gave me these ability to be a mom and nurture my kids and raise up great kids. You're a really talented communicator and educator. So your goal, part of what your purpose is, to get better and better at that and to become a better and better healer. So you're reading the medical journals, you're writing the books, you're doing all those things. And so, and you and I are very closely aligned in those purposes. And so for us, it's those things. Again, for my mom, it was helping other women. My mom might lead a Bible study or volunteer in the community or teach these women, breast cancer survivors, how to make those green superfood smoothies. It might be someone on social media. Today, most of the information on there is just trash, my best word I could think of, for what people are posting on social media. And there's a study that came out on the more time high school girls spend on social media, the lower their self-esteem goes. Well, turn the world into a heavenly place by being the opposite of that. Do everything you can to help lift up girls and teach them how to be virtuous and help those teenage girls, right? So I would think about what is, and here's how they do in Japan. It's called a kigi. They say, in order to find your purpose, answer this question. Number one, what are you passionate about? What do you love? Number two, what are you gifted at? And number three, what's a problem in the world that you can help solve? What is that thing that breaks your heart? You're like, this isn't right. Like something that you want to help, and then just start filling that gap. And if you can make money doing it, if there's a reward involved, then that's fine too. That's great too. But I think those are some ways to start to really tap into and find your purpose.
Excellent. I love that Japanese kigi you said.
A kigi, yeah.
Awesome. One of the things that you talked about that resonated with me in the book is about becoming, not accomplishing. And so can you distinguish what accomplishing is versus what you mean by becoming?
Yeah. So I'll start it off when I really realized this, by the way. I was at my grandfather's funeral, and I had an amazing grandfather. My grandfather was a World War II veteran, lived to be 96 years old. And this is pretty, when he was 44 years old, so I grew up in Ohio. He grew up fixing telephone, like blue collar work, fixing telephone lines that were broken. And at 44 years old, he's like, I'm just not doing what I love. And so he talked to my grandmother, and they ended up taking their entire life savings and buying land with a little lake on it, pond, and a campground. And so they took over this campground business and they turned that lake into a swim park. And so they put in diving boards and brought in sand for a beach. And so so growing up as a kid, it was an absolute dream world for me. And he operated this business for 52 years. And he made it his ministry. I mean, he would go back in that campground and he would give people food if they needed it. He would give money. Half the people stayed for free. My grandfather made no money whatsoever. When he died, they didn't really have much money to their name. But I was at his funeral, and the pastor who was leading the sermon, there was the part in the funeral that everybody knows where they say, does anyone have any final words or last words about Howard? Anything they want to say? And the first person that said something to me was an uncle of mine, and he was a few people over. And he just blurted out, and just 70 years old, in tears, cried out. He goes, Howard was my best friend. And I'm ashamed to say, for a split second, my first thought was, I don't think you weren't my grandfather's best friend, because I know that's my other uncle, whatever. But then I realized something. I realized there are hundreds of people in this room, and I'm absolutely certain you're right. My grandfather was your best friend, because probably half the people in the room felt like he was their best friend. Mm-hmm. And I had thought at that time as well, there was something that I kind of hit me. I thought, you know what? This is success. Like, you get to your end of your life and you have impacted people. And then people kept going after him, by the way, saying, I mean, I had somebody said, Howard saved my marriage. He was the father I never had. I mean, just these amazing things. And when I was a kid, my grandfather used to bring me, he volunteered once a week. He would go to the hospital, bring somebody their favorite meal. It was a volunteer as part of his church. And he would go and he would hold their hand and he would speak, he would talk to them and just kind of care for them. And so I remember that's how my grandfather was growing up. He was the guy too. And if you imagine a 9-year-old doing this, he'd put his arm, you know, his withered hand on your shoulder and encourage you and say, hey, how can I support you? But I started thinking about what is success? Because at the time, I think I was pursuing, again, writing a book and building a business and doing certain things, really accomplishing things. That was my biggest focus, was accomplishing things. And I thought about this and I thought, my grandfather never thought about that. Like, he was always focused on who he could become. So he went from this accomplishing to becoming mindset. And I thought about the difference between those mindsets. And he was a hero for a time, not anymore, but I used to do triathlons in cycle and I loved Lance Armstrong. And I saw he accomplished like winning 7 Tour de France's. And I realized, you know, and my heart was broken. I was so sad when I heard out he was cheating and doping and everything else. And so, but that's the accomplishing mindset. It's win at all costs, whatever it takes, money, character aside, it's win at all costs. And my
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a different topic and controversial, but I mean, my understanding is everybody was doping. So if everybody's doping, I'm not saying that's okay, but he had to make a hard decision of not doping and then definitely not winning. But if everybody's doping, isn't the platform here and he still won? I don't know.
Well, listen, I agree with you on that, in that everybody was cheating. And listen, I'm not being hard on Lance Armstrong. I still admire what he accomplished. I mean, again, part of when my mom was a cancer survivor, he built an incredible organization. If I had the opportunity to interview Lance or connect with him, I would just be encouraging of him because, you know, I think anytime anybody can learn from their mistakes, let me give you an example with Lance Armstrong. The thing that I admired most about him, I read an article years ago that he was at a bar in Austin and some guys that were drunk just started yelling at him like cheater, whatever else. He said, you know what? The old me would have gone and punched the guy in the face. And he said, what I did was I went back in and said, hey, would you tell those guys I'm truly sorry and pay for their meal? And then he left. And I thought, he went from an accomplishing mindset to a becoming mindset there. I mean, he started thinking more about that. Steve Jobs is another example of this. He is a person that was a billionaire, but at the end of his life, he told the person who was writing his biography, he said, I want my kids to know why I did what I did. And I realized that I regret I wasn't there for them. And so there's this quote in the Bible and it says, what good is gaining the world if you lose your soul? And I think it's a similar thing. What good is being right in your marriage if you lose your marriage? Or what good is gaining wealth if you lose your health? Like there's a cost to things, right?
So absolutely. So how do you find that balance? I mean, my mother passed away at a very young age and friends of mine were at the funeral telling me stories that I didn't even know of ways that they had connected with my mother. My mother was someone who was very involved in our lives and interested in our lives and our friends, both my brother and myself. And I was very busy accomplishing as well, right? Going to the Peace Corps, getting into medical school, all of these things. So there's value in both of those things, but how do you marry those two things so that you can both accomplish and be or become, as you say?
Yeah. And this could lead to an even, I think, another more powerful conversation alongside this, but I think it really starts with they need to be in their proper places. And that's really it. It's not, you need to do both, but becoming needs to be the primary and accomplishing needs to be the secondary. Because here's the thing I would say, and I have a graphic for this in the book, which when people have seen this, they've said, this is incredibly powerful. And basically I'll explain part of it here. And that it's, you don't only want to do the greatest things in the world. That's not the goal of life, is to do the greatest things. The goal of life is to do the greatest good, the greatest thing that leads to the greatest good. And so if you imagine it like this, there's this sort of diagram or this chart, and straight up and down is your skills and your giftings. Like you have athletes that do amazing things. You have doctors that do amazing things. You have researchers, artists, all of those things. But is it towards the bad or is it towards the good? And it always must be subservient towards the good, because you can do great things, but what if it's great things in the wrong direction? What if you start an amazing farming company, but you're destroying the climate and the environment? If you want to do anything meaningful and significant in life, you need it to count towards the good. And that only happens with character. And that's part of becoming. So rather than just having a to-do list, also have a to-be list. Okay, I'm going to try and get all these things done today. I'm going to call the customer service. Here's an example. I'm going to get on the phone with someone at customer service and I have to help them do this. Well, if you berate and are mean to somebody and terrible to them on customer service call, well, you did something and maybe you did 100 of those calls. And so you did something great, but all of those were towards the negative, versus if you get on there and you say, I have my to-do list, but I also have my to-be list to be generous and kind and loving. And you're able to do that alongside of your greatness. Well, now it's all used for good. So that's the thing, is we should focus on accomplishing things, but making sure we're doing it with the right sort of mentality and character in the way we're moving forward. And by the way, this is true with science. Science isn't superior to spirituality. Spirituality is superior to science. And here's what I mean by this. Spirituality lies in the domain of character. It's the unseen. It's this thing that you can't, like you don't see love. Now you see the effects of love with somebody hugging someone or somebody picking up somebody that's fallen. And the same goes for science. If you have science, or let's say a study as an example of this, did you know that more than 50% of studies today, per a study found, are biased and skewed because of the people doing the study?
I would imagine it's more than 50%.
I actually want to say it's 72 or 82%, okay. But it's incredibly high. So all that being said, so really doing a study, this scientific experiment, it has to be built on a foundation of ethics and morality. And so, not to get too, I don't want to get any more in the weeds here, but my point here with this is that it's incredibly important to keep in mind. So here's the reality. If you want to make the biggest impact with your life and do the most possible, take your gift and skills to the highest level possible, but do it at the same time towards the good with your character. If not, your accomplishments will actually lead towards a negative world.
I hear everything that you're saying, and it seems like we need that more than ever because the world is in a state quite the opposite more than ever, right? I mean, if 70 to 80% of all scientific studies out there are skewed, and you know it's probably even more than that because that's what somebody's actually reporting or has uncovered and discovered, right? So there more wealth and power is being controlled by fewer people in the world. And some of them may not be using that for the good. So I guess my first question is, even myself, someone who I feel like I have decent amount of influence in a certain sphere within the world and certainly good intentions in the world, I mean, I can even wake up kind of feeling in despair and feeling a little overwhelmed by what's happening.
You've got to know that if you're listening to this podcast or watching this, that if you aren't operating in your gifts and operating with character, the world loses something. It really does. And so you want to do everything to take your character and take your skill to the highest level possible in becoming. And again, becoming should be the primary. And then here's the thing. When you become a certain type of person and you focus more on, I'm going to become a better leader. I'm going to become more generous. I'm going to become more wise. I'm going to read the right things. Then the right accomplishments tend to flow out of those things.
Well, back to your story of healing, and you mentioned, I think, a number of times of, I don't know if you called it visualizations, where you just really, I mean, there's so many studies on this, right? Of, I mean, even with athletes, right? Like envisioning yourself throwing the ball, envisioning yourself getting the touchdown, envisioning yourself winning the game, and not just vision, but literally feeling it in every cell of your body. So it sounds like you were doing something similar with throwing your daughter in the air and swimming with her in the pool. Can you talk to us about the power? Do you call it visualization? What do you call it and power of that?
Yeah, I call it visualization. And one of the things that I found in my personal experience and working with people and also even the studies is that you want to go beyond just visualization. So what I actually tend to start with one thing before I visualize is I do prioritize and I think about the end of my life and I think about what are the most important things in my life, like my family, like God, like my health. And I make sure that those things are lined up because you could visualize driving a Lamborghini, but is that really going to lead to the, and that's fine for some people. My point is that the most fulfilling thing that you should have visualized. And I think for some people, maybe a few people it is, but I don't think it's the majority. So for me, I really decided what, like, as I was going through this, I want to visualize myself with my family and doing these things together. And so I would visualize very clearly myself playing with my almost 4-year-old now daughter, and we got a 3-month-old as well. So I would visualize that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
A girl or boy?
Girl. I'm a girl dad. So visualization, you know, the studies are really powerful in terms of trying to clearly picture what you want your life to look like. And then the next step is, so you want to prioritize, visualize, and then you want to systematize. What's the system in place that you need in order to, for instance, for me to heal? So the way that I systematize is I write down, what are all the individual things I could do that could have contributed to my health? So I wrote down hyperbaric chamber, taking certain supplements like turkey tail mushroom and astragalus and a number of things, collagen. Okay, what's another thing that I could do? I need to spend time in prayer and meditation. Okay, what's another thing for my healing? Well, as soon as I could, doing exercises in the pool every day, specific exercises. So I had those down. And then after I systematized, then I systematized and put those all in my schedule. And just those were our habits, right? These are daily habits where I ate this and I exercised like this and I did this. And then I realized the results. And so that's really the process. And I have a really cool graphic in the book where I really go through how do you go from that process to this and this, and people can plan it for themselves in there. But yeah, I really think that visualization is something not a lot of people are doing enough of to just be crystal clear. This is where I want to get in the future. But then the second part really is you need to have a strategy then. What is the ideal strategy to make that vision a reality?
And I see, as you were just literally saying all those things, I could see me being someone who was moving towards accomplishing to get to the goal of walking again versus, as you were saying, becoming. So I guess when you're literally fighting for your life, so to speak, to walk again, do you have a strategy to balance the making sure you're doing these things to also living in that becoming stage?
I did. I was incredibly conscious of it. Let me give you an example. When I was in bed for a month, and by the way, I couldn't even be in a wheelchair. Like, my back pain was so excruciating. There was a time I could hardly roll on my side. I could crawl places. That's all I could do. And that was for, again, almost a year. And so when I was in bed, I thought, I've got a 3-year-old right now, and she's seeing the way that I carry myself. My parents were in Florida, so they came over regularly, my wife, Chelsea. And I was really conscious of, I'm not going to live in a victim. I'm not going to have hopelessness. I'm not going to be mean to people just because I feel bad. I am going to do the best I can to show my daughter what it's like to suffer with honor and to thrive in the midst of suffering. And so there was, now listen, that I also believe in authenticity. So there were a few times where, when that time when I still hadn't seen results, even when I was doing all the treatments, when Chelsea was next to me and I'm crying and I'm saying, you know what, like, hey, I just need you to pray for me right now. And she encouraged me and I complained a little bit. But generally speaking, 99% of the time, outside of, again, needing to be authentic, and it was very much, you know what, hey, daddy, how are you doing today? I'm healing. And I'm so excited about my progress. When I was progressing, here's how I'm doing. And even before I saw progress, you know what, I know I'm going to get healed and back to 100%. And so I think that my parents would tell you this too, that my dad, I was on the phone with him the other day, and he let me know how proud he was of me because of how I carried myself through it. And even in those situations, I thought, how can I say something encouraging to Chelsea? How can I, like, I couldn't throw my daughter up in the air, but I could have her crawl in bed with me and watch Paw Patrol or Peppa Pig or something, and then also pray for her at night and tell her how great she's doing when she brought me artwork and have a really positive mindset. So yeah, so I really was very focused on letting myself be refined through the process, because the trials we go through in life, if we go through them with the right mindset, they will shape us and help us grow in character. Like, I feel much more resilient now. I have greater empathy. I have greater compassion. I have a greater strength to me after going through that. So all that being said, I was very conscious of that, not only the strategy for healing, but also the strategy for growing as I went through that.
So, and it sounds like, was this the time that you were doing a lot of research? I mean, did you utilize that time to do the research for what is now your book?
The book. Yeah, I had a friend come over and he said, what have you been doing, or what are you doing right now? Because I was on my computer and just in bed. And I said, well, I'm writing a book. And he goes, well, gosh, if I were you, I would just be eating Cheetos and drinking Mountain Dew. And I said, but really, this is what you and I connect with earlier. It's like, it's being, having a purpose. Like, I know that God has called me to help people grow in their body and their mind and their spirit. And so if I can help people experience a breakthrough in their mindset with this mindset medicine and help them heal that way, like, that's part of my purpose. And that's, so I wrote this entire book from bed. There wasn't a word that wasn't written that entire time, but it allowed me to spend so much time going over the research and writing. And everyone that's read it said, I've written a lot of health books, but it's the best book I've written. And I'd love to go back just to start, like, what really initiated sort of this mindset medicine idea, just to give people an example of how you don't need to change everything, but if you just make one change. So when I was in high school, I was a terrible student. And so when I was in high school, freshman English class, I had a teacher, her name was Miss Noble. She asked me to stay after class. And I stayed after, and she said, Josh, what do you want to do after high school? And I said, I want to be a doctor. And the reason I said that was the year before my mom went through chemotherapy with breast cancer. And I remember thinking, there's got to be a better way, and I want to help people like my mom. So I said, I want to be a doctor. And she laughed out loud. And she said, listen, my daughter has a 3.8 GPA. She's at Ohio State University, and she barely got into med school. She said, with your GPA, you'll never get in. And she said, you got an F on this paper. You're getting a D in my class. You need to try harder. And that was it. And I walked out. But as a 14-year-old kid, like, the thing that I took away was, I'm not smart. And then 2 weeks later, my mom brought me to see a doctor because he diagnosed me with a learning disorder. He said, you have severe ADHD. and he prescribed Ritalin. And I didn't start taking the drug because my mom didn't want me to take it. And I'm really glad of that. But the thing that I walked away from that was, I remember literally thinking, I thought, gosh, not only am I not smart, I'm medically not smart. Like there's something wrong with me. And so throughout high school, I really stopped even trying. And the only reason I graduated with a C- GPA, like barely like a 2 point whatever GPA. And I just graduated because I knew my dad would just be so angry if I didn't graduate high school. So that was like my whole motivation. And I graduated and I did want to go to college. I applied to schools and I got denied by almost everywhere. But the University of Kentucky sent me a letter and they said, you're not in. But if you come and take summer school classes and average above a 3.0, we'll let you in. And I thought, well, I don't want to be the kid that stays home and goes to community college. Like I want to go off to college. And so I went and tried. And so I went and the first class I had to take was English 101. And I remember thinking when our first big assignment, which was a paper, I thought, I'm really going to try on this. And so I tried, I handed it in. And then the teacher, her name was Miss Williams, she asked me to stay afterwards. And I thought, oh no, like not this again. And she says, what's your major? And I said, I don't have a major. I haven't chosen one. And she said, well, I think you should consider being an English major or a journalism major. She said, because you're a really great writer. She said, you got an A, not only an A, you got the highest grade in the whole class on this paper. You did a great job. I think you can be a really gifted writer. And I said, thank you. And I walked out. And honestly, for me, Amy, like it was such a, like it was so needed. And I had believed for 4 years that I just was not smart. And I didn't try. And honestly, my thoughts of being a doctor just went away. I never thought about it again for 4 years. And then that teacher told me I was a good writer. And it was like, I'll call it like a memory transplant or a mindset transplant. It's almost like you have a sick organ, like you got this diseased heart or kidney. And then I got something new put inside of me that now is functioning properly. And then I thought, I can do this. And then in college, I averaged above a 3.0 GPA. I went to Johns Hopkins. I graduated there with a 3.9 GPA and eventually went on to become a doctor, write books, all the things. And I don't share any of that to boast. I share it because here's the reality. If I would have held on to that one limiting belief that I wasn't smart, I wouldn't have done any of that. Like I would not be doing this interview with you here today if I wouldn't have had that mental shift. And there's a lot of people listening to this and watching that you have a limiting belief. And it could be you don't believe you can heal, or you believe you have to be on the pill or live with the condition the rest of your life, whatever it is. Or it could be a limiting belief about a relationship or a career. And so you're not writing the book, or you're not starting the business or doing the thing, and you might be one limiting belief away from experience your breakthrough. And that's really what this book is about, is going through, here's how you break through these limiting beliefs. And I'm super proud of it. I also did an accompanying workbook and a video series called it's a Mindset Masterclass, that if people go to joshax.com and you get the book there, or you can get it on Amazon too and go to joshax.com, you'll get, it's hundreds of dollars worth of free gifts and bonuses, expert interviews on mindset and healing and a number of things. And so if people are interested for the next couple of weeks, you can go on to joshax.com or Amazon, get the book, and then just plug in the code you get from your book and you'll get hundreds of dollars worth of these free bonuses. But I really think if people are saying, I want to experience a breakthrough in my health or life in any way, I think it's an amazing book to help people do that.
I mean, isn't it powerful that we talked about the doctor telling you may never walk, and we certainly know all the studies of the doctor who says your cancer's terminal, you're going to die in 3 months, and the person dies in 3 months. You get told you're a terrible writer. I mean, if you hadn't challenged that, I have a somewhat similar experience as well of high school really not doing that well, getting into college, but I had to work my way into the honors college at the University of South Carolina, and I wanted to take pre-med classes, and my brother was older than me, and he said, oh, no, those are going to be too hard for you. But it was my interest and I didn't do it. I didn't believe in myself enough. So then after graduating college, I had to go back and do 2 years of post-bac pre-med because, I mean, I knew back then I loved science. I was interested in it. I was passionate about it. I didn't know till my Peace Corps experience I wanted to be a doctor. But those people in our lives, it literally the power of one person to affect your lifespan, whether you walk again, whether, you know, you're going to be successful in school. So before we part ways, can you talk about how somebody, I mean, obviously your book and all the resources that you just mentioned on your website, but that they can have this, you said mindset transplant.
Yeah. So here's what I recommend in overcoming limiting beliefs. Here's just one little tip. When you think about limiting beliefs, one, you want to identify it and when it started. When's the first time you felt not beautiful or unworthy or whatever it might be, like you couldn't heal? Right. And when did you first start? Maybe it's not the first time, but the first time you can think of when it started. And then you want to go back, identify that, and write down, what is it exactly that I believe? Is it that I'm not worthy or I'm broken or something like that? And then you want to go and you want to prove why that's not true. Like, for instance, I could think about, well, I got in a few times in high school. So like, it's not that I could never do good. And it's that maybe I wasn't interested or I wasn't working hard enough. So there's a number of things there. And then you want to replace it with something. And so you want to say, what should I believe? And one of the best ways to know what you should believe is think about somebody that's thriving in the area of life you want to thrive and say, what do they truly believe? And try and align with their type of thinking. So for instance, for me, I'm not smart. Well, now I'm going to contest that saying, well, I've gotten A's and I got an A on this paper and I had Miss Williams tell me I'm a great writer. So I put that up on my bathroom mirror. I realized that, okay, that's true. What should I believe? Well, I am smart. I'm made in the image of God. I am called, I have gifts and skills. And so I think you just want to be able to then reinforce that on a regular basis. And going back to what you said, this is so good, is that life and death is in the power of the tongue. Our words are unbelievably powerful. You know, there are people who have gone years without somebody saying something encouraging to them. Literally, that happens constantly. And so if you can just decide to be an encourager of other people, that will mean the world. And don't do it inauthentically, but go up to them. And you simply do this, is just look for the best in people. You could find 10 things wrong with them at that moment in time. But if you find that one thing and let them know that, say, you know what? You did a beautiful piece of artwork here, or you've got a great voice, really talented, or hey, you worked so hard on that. I just want to let you know, I noticed how hard, you know, if you've got a team member or employees or people alongside you, letting them know, I'm really grateful for how much hard work you put in that. I know it's a lot. Mm-hmm. I mean, just doing that makes such a big difference in people's lives. So I would just say that's one thing, is that know that you are powerful because your words are powerful. And so the more that you can speak life to people, the bigger change you can make in people.
And I don't know if you know this statistic, but there's this statistic about sort of one negative thing you need to say at least five positive things or to counteract the one negative thing, right? I mean, it can't just be a one-to-one. You have to overshadow with the positive to outweigh the negative.
Yeah. And a lot of this is perception too, because it's what we like. If you and I would go through our, I'll give you an example. If I go through my YouTube page or Instagram page and I post something that's maybe semi-controversial, I'm going to have a mix of people just saying you're wrong and whatever. Like I did one on birth control pills, and just because I'm not a fan of the side effects, mm-hmm. I think can be terrible.
Right.
And I got some people just mad at me about it, just mad. I mean, said mean things. And I could sit there, if I only focused on all the mean things, I could think of, oh God, like feel bad about myself. But if I focus on the positive ones, and so some of it is choose to focus on the one, not the five.
Right. Absolutely. Well, for those who haven't already, pick up a copy of your book, Think This, Not That. And before we part, I'd like to ask folks kind of three things that you would recommend people can do to take back their health, or maybe you want to take back your mindset.
Yeah, well, number one, let's start with that as number one, and I'll head on the other two. Take back your mindset. And so I would say number one thing I want to encourage everybody to do is identify areas where you're not thinking correctly. Do you have a scarcity mentality? Is it you have a wrong belief about yourself or about other people? So identify, number one, what's that one bit limiting belief you have in your life? Number two, let's tap into that vision you have for your life. Have you stopped dreaming? Have you stopped thinking about what your best life can look like? Go and rethink and envision, what does your ideal future look like? Then work backwards and start creating a strategy to get there. Number three, I would say, I really believe that one of the best things we can do health-wise is get outside first thing in the morning. Like, win the morning, win the day. This is something I like to say, win the morning, win the day. So if you can create some healthy practices in the morning, like I'll share mine. I wake up in the morning and I will do a walk while being grateful, and maybe even praying on the walk, but I'll go for a 15-minute walk outside, and I'm killing a lot of birds with one stone. It's like I'm getting sunlight, vitamin D, my circadian rhythms are balanced, I'm walking, getting my blood moving, and I'm doing a gratitude practice, all of those happening. Then I'll walk inside, I'll make myself a superfood smoothie with pretty much just collagen and some berries. That's pretty much all I have in there. And then I'll sit down and maybe read something positive, and then I'll hug my family. And then, I mean, that 30 minutes in the morning just gets my morning started right. So I'd say number three is win your morning by some of those health practices, superfood smoothie, walking. Now, if you're intermittent fasting, move everything back a few hours. But all that being said, that's a great way to start your day.
Excellent. And you mentioned before your website, but if you want to just share again your website or social media where people can find you.
Yeah, just go to joshaxe.com. That's joshaxe.com. And you can learn more about the book there and get it in all the free bonuses there. Also, my Instagram handle is at Dr. Josh Axe. And my podcast is The Dr. Josh Axe Show. And like I said, we've had some great guests. We had Carrie Underwood on. You're coming on, maybe the biggest celebrity and one of the best interviews of all. If you want to listen to the interview I do here with Dr. Amy in the future. And then also, yeah, it's on YouTube, it's on iTunes, but yeah, at the Dr. Josh Axe Show, you can find there as well.
Well, this was great. I was so glad to catch up with you. Sorry to hear the struggles that you've been through, but it sounds like you took the motto of making lemonade out of lemons. And really, I've only scanned your new book, but I was just telling you before this interview how much I was enjoying it, and I'm excited to dive deeper. So thanks for continuing to improve yourself, try to improve the world, and create great little humans as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for having me, Dr. Amy. It was an honor.
Yeah, great to talk to you. Take care.
I want to thank this week's guests for sharing their time and knowledge, and thank you for listening. To read the full show notes for each episode, which include a summary, timestamp, quotes, and any resources mentioned, please visit amymyersmd.com/podcast. Lastly, if you've enjoyed this episode, I'd love if you would leave a rating and a review on Apple or Spotify, and we'll select a few to read out loud in a future episode. Tune in next week to hear from another inspiring guest as we help you take back your health.